the Mishnah at the beginning of Sanhedrin, Dine Momenis Bishlosha, Zelos Vechavolos Bishlosha. So what we want to study now is the word Zelos. Rashi tells us Gzelos is kofer v'pikadon d'misha shalach bo yad havi gazlan. So Rashi says that the category called gzela applies to a shomer. And how does it, when is it applied to a shomer? When he's kofer v'pikadon. So Reuven is tovei Shimon, where's the sheep that I gave you? And he says, you never gave me a sheep. Then shalach yad v'pikadon means that, let's take a horse, maybe it's more logical, yeah, the horse was given over from Reuven to Shimon, the mafkid to the shomer, and then Shimon decides to ride the horse. So that's called shalach yad v'pikadon. And then Rashi says, v'chein achotef miyad chavero. And this is the classic case of gzela in the entire, you know, all the Masechtas in the Zikin, where a person grabs something out of his friend's possession. Kigon v'yigzolos achanis miyad ha-mitzri. The Gemara in Bava Kamma quotes that pasuk over and over again as a paradigm of gzela. So I want to share with you a number of questions on this Rashi. One question is, does Rashi have two cases in Shomer that a Shomer becomes a Gazan, or only one case? Meaning, do you put a comma here, either or is it one continuous Rashi? Let's read it in two ways. One way of reading Rashi is kofer v'pikadon, period. And then another option would be mishasholach boyah. But then the dalid of did Misha Shalach Boyad is very strange. He should have said Kofer B'Pikadon Oh Sheshalach Boyad or Misha Shalach Boyad. What's Dimi Sheshalach Boyad? So the Aruch HaNer here at the very beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin quotes another Girs of Rashi, and that Girs of Rashi is Kofer B'Pikadon Oh Shalach Boyad. So they're two separate cases.
Yeah, because if it's the first way,
that is all one case.
He never did anything. He wasn't Shalach Boyad, but he was Kepi Gun. He got it in his house, but he hid it.
So the problem here is that if you're going to separate it, that's good. But if you're going to read it as one flowing case, then it's against the Gemara in Bava Kamma. Because the Gemara in Bava Kamma, you can jot it down if you like on Kuf Hei Amid Beis, Omer Rav Sheshes, HaKofer V'Pikadon Nasa Lov Gazlan. The Chayav Ba'onsin. Rav Sheshes doesn't qualify that he had to be a Shalech Yad V'Pikadon. So from that perspective, the Aruch HaNer is very enticing to add a word O here to Rashi. Again, there was apparently a Girsa like that in the Aruch HaNer. And then you read it as two separate categories, and Kofer B'Pikadon per se is a Gazlan. O, the Shalach Bo Yad, because Shlichas Yad is also a Gazlan. That's a little bit more clear when the Shomer decides to move the object from one place to the other for his personal purposes. So as long as the object is in one place, that's where the Mafkin, you know, and the Shomer decided they're going to designate that place, then it's not in the hands of the Shomer, although physically it's in the hands of the Shomer, but we have a principle called Yad Shomer Ki Yad Balabayas. But as soon as the Shomer decides he's going to move it and use it elsewhere, he removes it from the Rishus of the Mafkin, and that becomes the Rishus of the Shomer. That's an act of Gzela. So we know that Shalech Yad Pikadon is Gzela. If you accept the Aruch HaNer, then it's two cases of Gzela, and that's fine. If on the other hand you take Alagir, so without the word O, then Rashi seems to be qualifying Kofer B'Pikadon, and he's saying that when is a Kofer B'Pikadon a Gazlan? Dimisha Shalach Bo Yad Avi Gazlan. So it's not enough that he's Kofer B'Pikadon, and then we're stuck with the sugi of Rav Sheshes on Daf Kuf Hei Amid Beis. Rav Sheshes says that a Kofer B'Pikadon Nasal of Gazlan V'Chai Ba'Onsim. The very moment that he makes that claim that he never got the object, the Pikadon, it never came into his Rishus, he becomes a Gazlan. So why does Rashi have to qualify it and add Misha Shalach Bo Yad? Also, the sequence of Rashi is a little bit odd. You know, he starts with Kofer B'Pikadon, which is a very sophisticated case of a Gazlan, instead of the simpler case of a Gazlan, Misha Shalach Bo Yad. very moment that he takes it into his rishus, because he removes it from the place, the location where it was placed, that makes him into a gazlan. But if we're talking about sequence, what's most odd about this Rashi is that v'chein achotef miyad chavero havi gazlan. Well, achotef miyad chavero is not like an additional case of gzela. That is gzela. A gazlan is someone who's chotef miyad chavero. If somebody pickpockets, he's a gazlan. Why does Rashi add that almost as an addendum? He's very interested in classifying gzela under the parasha of Shomer, and then only afterwards does he invoke the classic case of a gazlan. The very sequence in Rashi is a bit odd, to say the least. Now, what's interesting is that the Mishnah is addressing the following subject. How many judges do we need for a Beis Din? What's the minimum amount of judges to sit on the court and issue a verdict, which is recognized and validated by the Torah? Not only that, as we'll see in the Sugya Mirtz Hashem, on Daf Beis Amid Beis, the Mishnah is not only addressing the question of how many judges, but who are these judges? How do they qualify to be Dayanim? And the Gemara quotes a parsha in Sefer Shmos, in Parshas Mishpatim, to prove that the Dayanim, who make up this Beis Din of three judges, have to be mumchim, means they have to be smuchim. They have to have smicha, ish mipi ish, that goes back in an unbroken chain to Moshe Rabbeinu. How does the Gemara derive that? Because it says Elohim three times. Elohim three times teaches me that we need three judges and that they have to be mumchim. Now, where does that parsha appear? Again, as I said before in Mishpatim, but where in Mishpatim? It appears in the parsha of a Shomer. In parsha Shomrim, the Torah says El Elohim Yavo Dvar Shneim, and it repeats the word Elohim three times. It could be that the reason why Rashi begins his discussion of Gzela with the parsha of Shomrim, it's because that's the very parsha that teaches me the din of our Mishnah. From whence do we derive the requirement of Shlosha Dayanim for Dini Mominus? And not only that, Mochim, the Gemara later on is going to say they made a special takana with regard to Halva, that you don't require Mumchim, Kidei Shalotin Oldelis Bifnei Lovim, but on a Doraisa level, even in the case of Halva, so I'm Tovei you 1,000 because you borrowed 1,000, you deny the claim, we need a judgment from a Beis Din of Mumchim, and that's derived from the Parsha of Shomrim, because in the Parsha of Shomrim, the Torah repeats the word Elohim three times. So maybe Rashi wants to give a certain preference in his sequence to that parasha which actually teaches us the requirement of shlosha, meaning in this case shlosha mumchim, and that is the parasha of Shomer. However, let's ask the following question. If we assume, leaving aside the other girsa, that Rashi is talking about a combination of A plus B, meaning kofer bipikadon plus sholeach yad bipikadon, then we have a twofold question. It's really shtayim shein achas. Number one, why does Rashi need to add sholeach yad bipikadon to a kofer bipikadon? The Gemara says the kofer bipikadon is a gazlan. Question number two, why does Rashi need kofer bipikadon? Even without being kofer b'mikodon, the very moment that he was sholeach bo yad he's chayav, and he becomes a gazlan. And from now on, if an onus happens and lightning strikes, he'll have to pay. So even if he was never kofer b'mikodon, he's a gazlan by virtue of the shlichas yad b'mikodon. So Rashi has A plus B, according to this girsa as we have it. And the question is, why does he need A plus B? He could have either A or either B, as the girsa of the Aruch HaNer would have. So in order to analyze these questions, let's begin with the basics. When we say that Dini Mominus B'Shlosha requires three judges, we have to emphasize that the purpose, the function of these three judges is a twofold function. Number one, they have to receive evidence. That's called Kabbalas Eidus. Number two, they have to have Horas Din, and they have to issue a verdict. The Mefarshim asked the following question. The Mishnah goes into great detail, enumerating all the cases that require a bezdin. And yet there's one obvious case that's completely omitted from this Mishnah. And that's what's called a davar shebe'erva. So take, for example, a man claims that he divorced his wife, or a woman claims that she received a divorce from her husband. That's a davar shebe'erva. We have what's called a gzeira shava, that mama davar mi mama, that tells me that just like in the case of dini mamanos, the Torah says al pi shnayim eidim yakum davar, required two eidim, so too by virtue of this gzeira shava, a davar shebe'erva requires two eidim. Now, in order for two eidim to testify, we need a bezdin. So why is it that davar shebe'erva, which is the most obvious case where we need a bezdin, is completely omitted from this Mishnah? Now again, in order for you to prove the point, we need an hour to go through this Mishnah. I think it's the longest Mishnah in Shas. But be that as it may, you have to trust me, davar shebe'erva doesn't appear on this Mishnah. And why not? So you remember that the Talmud of Reb Chaim was Reb Baruch Ber. And Reb Baruch Ber has in the name of Rav Chaim a gevaldige chiddush. And he says the following, not in the context of this Mishnah. He says that according to Rav Chaim's understanding, a davar shebe'erva does not require a bezdin. Let's qualify that. A davar shebe'erva requires two eidim, just like davar shebe'mamon requires two eidim. Excellent. Excellent. So again, there's no din of Eidech and then Bisurin here. That would apply in the case...
One Rav can pass on the Surin.
Okay, good. So you're not talking about Eidus, you're talking about Pesach HaLoch. Okay, excellent. So here's what Reb Chaim wanted to say. True, there's no doubt about it. Dover Mimamon, we need to aid him in a case of Erva. But for that, we need Bezdin only to establish the evidence. Once the evidence is already established and Bezdin was makabel to aid him with Drisha Fakir, etc., at that point, we don't need a Bezdin. Reb Chaim was of the opinion at this point, it becomes Dovash of Isur, which doesn't require Oras Bezdin, it only requires Oras Isur Veheter. And for Oras Isur Veheter, we don't need a Bezdin. So if I come up to a Rav and I want to know whether this Mara is Damnida, or I want to know whether this Basar is Shchuta and it's Kshero, or it's Nevela, or it's Trefa, he can paskin for me. I don't need a Bezdin for that. In Eidus, I need a Bezdin. The difference between Isur and Davar Shebe'erva is that in Davar Shebe'erva, in order to set up a Horaz Din of Isur Veheter, I need first Davar Mimam and Shnei Eidim. So for that, I'll need a Bezdin. But as soon as the Bezdin fulfills its responsibility and accepts the testimony of two Eidim, from that point on, I don't need a Horaz Bezdin. In Dini Mominus, it's not enough for the Eidim to be accepted by Bezdin, and Bezdin will function in the capacity of Kabbalah's Eidus, they have to go a step further and give a Horaz Din, and that requires Bezdin. Those cases then that are enumerated in this Mishnah require a Bezdin, not just for receiving and judging the evidence, but they require Bezdin in order to be Mora Horah, in order to give a Horaz Din. Masha Enkein and Dini Erva, we may need a Bezdin because otherwise there are no two Eidim, and Eidim Shemeber Pox Mishnayim. But once Bezdin has functioned to be Makabali Eidus, that's it. I don't need a Horaz Bezdin. All I need is a Horaz Chacham. That a Chacham will say, well, we have two Eidim that testify that Reuven divorced his wife Leah, therefore Leah is allowed to get married. I don't need a Horaz Bezdin according to Reb Chaim in order to issue a ruling on a Davar Shebe'erva. The ruling on the Davar Shebe'erva can be issued by a Chacham, like any Horaz Isur Veheter. I only need a Bezdin as far as Kabbalah's Eidus. What's common to all the cases in our Mishnah is we need what's called Horaz Din, and Horaz Din requires Bezdin. Hence, in the case of Davar Shebe'erva, we're not going to mention any requirement of Bezdin, even though we will require Bezdin, but that's only for what? For Kabbalah's Eidus, but not for Horaz Din. So according to Reb Chaim, it's very interesting.
So, for example, cases like Eidus of Fatim, looking at the Momnus part of it, rather than the Isur part of it.
Correct. Well, Onus of Fatim really is not relevant to Isur. There's no Isur that's generated by the Maisa Bia. I mean, she may be Asura because of other reasons. Maybe she's an Ervo, maybe she's a Mamzeres. But the Maisa Bia per se doesn't generate any Iser per se. So really in the case of Onis and Mefata, okay, that could be, maybe, I don't know. You have to know about Pi'ul Shalom Kedarik. I mean, yeah, you have to know a lot of sugyas in order to figure out, you know, whether she's a Bu'ul as far as Kohen Gadol. But primarily, the issue of Onis Mefata is a Dini Mominis issue for three reasons. Number one, she's going to lose her Ksuba from now on. Number two, she's a Bu'ula as far as Knas, meaning he made her into a Bu'ula, he has to pay a Knas. And number three, he has to pay Nezikin under the laws of Nezik, Tzar, Ripu, Shevis, and Boshes. Again, don't quote me on that because he doesn't pay all five, but he pays three out of those five categories. And that's Onis Mefata. But basically, Onis Mefata requires a Ras Bezdin because it's Dini Mominis. And that requires Shlosha. But in the case of Dovah Sheba'erva, you know, you would have said intuitively, Kal v'chor, I require a Ras Bezdin. I mean, you're talking about Achiv Misa if she's an Eishes Ish. But nevertheless, it's a Ras Isa v'heter. And all we need the Bezdin for is to function for Kabbalah's Eilus.
Meaning, they just have to be there while the Eilim see the Eilim.
Correct, and they have to interrogate the Eidim, and then they have to finally issue a statement that the Eidim are Ksherim, and that they checked out the Eidim. But after that, now we have two Eidim testifying that this woman received a get, she didn't receive a get. Now the Horas did is Horas Isa Beheta, whether you can marry this woman or not.
And any Rav can come along and pass him.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if any Rav could do it. You know, that's a contemporary issue which we won't address right now. If you want, you can come.
But a Rav that has the authority to do it.
Correct.
Would say.
The same Rav who could tell you that this is Upachas Mikagris, and therefore it's not a Kesem, or the same Rav will tell you that this is a Basar Shachlut, and it's not an Avel or a Trefa, is the same Rav who could tell you that you could marry this woman, she's a Grusha, even if, well, only if, I should say, you're not a Kohen. All right. Now there's a very interesting discussion in the Achronim. I'm just mentioning it, Derech Agav, because it's relevant to what we said before about the case of Sota. Because once again, Sota is a process that has to take place in Bezdin. Bezdin is going to be Mashke the Sota, but yet Sota is not included in this Mishnah.
It's Bezdin Shema, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean as far as whether she'll blow up or not.
Yeah, exactly.
That depends on Bezit Shalmala. But to be Mashke the Sota, you're going to first need Edom on Kini and Stira. There's going to be a whole process which will culminate with Hashkos HaSota. However, Sota is not mentioned in this Mishnah. And I think Reb Chaim might say the same Shtikl Torah, because all we need for Bezdin is to accept the evidence and supervise the Hashkos HaSota. What happens afterwards, for example, if let's say we cannot, Bezdin comes to the conclusion we cannot be Mashke the Sota, but we do have Eidei Kini and Stira, but for technical reasons Hashkos HaSota would be impossible. In such a case, I would only need a Horas Isa V'Heter to tell the husband that he can no longer live with her. And as a result of Kini and Stira, and he doesn't know whether she had this relationship with another man or not, he has to be porish, of course, echel lebal, echel leboel, but that's again oras isa v'heter. I can justify why the Mishnah omits the case of Sota, because again, Bezdin will have to play a major role in accepting testimony and then in supervising the Hashkos Sota, but as far as isa v'heter is concerned, we don't need a horas Bezdin, all we need is a horas Chacha.
Doesn't have to be a kasha between the
Kabbalah Sidus
and the
Hara. Yes and no. In other words, we can separate them into two shlavim, and shlav aleph will be, well, let's determine what the facts are on the ground. Now you want to know, well, what does that mean practically in terms of whether I can marry this woman, whether I can't marry this woman? That's already a Hara Sisa Veheta. I don't need a Bezdin for that. Bezdin doesn't, you see, in Dini Mominis, Bezdin is creating a Hora. Again, we're going to talk about this in another context, not for now. I mean, this is really advanced. But Bezdin really creates the Hora. And before the Hora is Bezdin, then there is no Chiyuv Ma. They create the Chiyuv Ma. And again, that's a Sugya Masechta Makis also in the question of Edim Zom. I just want to add one question here, which I don't have an answer to, and that's Zaken Mamre. Zaken Mamre requires a Bezdin of Ayin Aleph. Now, our Mishnah is going to address three different cases. Case number one is when you require a Bezdin of Shlosha. Category number two, when you require a Bezdin of Chof Gimel. And number three, when you require a Bezdin of Ayin Aleph. Now, Zaken Mamre requires a Bezdin of Ayin Aleph. Why isn't it listed amongst the cases that require a Sanhedrin Agdola of Ayin Aleph? So I was thinking maybe we could use Reb Chaim's logic here, but I don't think it's going to work out in this case, because what happens with a Zaken Mamre? We're going to have to take evidence. We're going to have to prove that the Zaken was Cholek Al Bezdin Agdol with many, many different conditions, all of which are set forth in the 11th parak, which is called Elein HaNathnokim. Let's say, for example, we need two Edim that he was Cholek on Bezdin when the Bezdin HaGadol was sitting in the Lishkas HaGazis. So the fact that he goes back to his town and he issues a Horah against the Bezdin, that doesn't necessarily make him into a Zaken Mamre. We're going to really need a heck of a lot of evidence to prove that all the requirements were met and he's a Zaken Mamre. What happens then? Let's say Bezdin decides, after all the evidence, that he is a Zaken Mamre. So the Ayin Aleph now issue the following statement. We have all the evidence on the table. The man is a Zaken Mamre. What happens then? Can the judges just pack out? I mean, they have to institute a Chiyuv Misa, right? Eluhena Nechnokim. I mean, the Zaken Mamre gets chenek. That's not a pleasant way to die. That needs a Horas Bezdin, does it not? Or is it possible... Again, this sounds very odd, but I can't understand it, that maybe Bezdin only plays a role up to a certain point, and that's Ayin Aleph. Then what happens is it becomes Dinei Nefashos. Dinei Nefashos require how many Edim? I'm sorry, how many judges? 23. So what happens is the makeup of the Bezdin initially is going to be, and has to be, at least Ayin Aleph. Once the Ayin Aleph Zakenim decide that this is a Zaken Mamre, he's Chayav Misa. Now, I don't know the math, who can do a quick math here? 23 minus 71 is going to be, what, 50?
48.
So now 48 out of the judges could just drop out, we'll send them home, and then we'll decide that he's Chayav Misa in a Bezdin of 23. So now you have a very interesting Zev Zegorim situation. You have a Bezdin of Ayin Aleph. They did everything to adduce evidence and determine that this man is a Zaken Mamre, but we don't need the final Horas Bezdin of Ayin Aleph to put him to death. We can have 48 judges drop out, send it to a Bezdin of Chof Gimel, let them issue the final verdict that he's Chayav Misa. So in this case of Zaken Mamre, which is omitted from the Mishnah, the reason is because it doesn't fit into either of the two categories. It doesn't require Bezdin Chaf Gimel, because we require Bezdin of Ayin Aleph, and that's in order to determine that he's a Zaken Mamre. On the other hand, it doesn't fit into the category of Ayin Aleph, because we don't need a Horas Chiyuv Chenek from a Bezdin of Ayin Aleph. All we need is a Horas Bezdin of Chaf Gimel, and that would be sufficient. So Mimanevshach, it like falls in between the cracks. What we're looking for in our Mishnah is a requirement for a Bezdin both to determine the facts on the ground, and number two, to issue a Horah. And in this case of Zaken Mamre, it doesn't fit either into this or into that, because we're going to split the two functions of Bezdin.
Why does it mention Chalitza?
Chalitza, interesting. Chalitza, Chalitza is a Dama Sheba Erev.
Because if a woman is under the Yibum, is an Erev?
So that's a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel, I believe, in Masechta Yevamos, whether Chalitza, whether Yevam Lashuk is an Erev. So Daniel is asking if Reb Chaim's thesis is that we require a Bezdin only for the ritual, you know, to supervise the, you know, first we determine that this woman was married to so-and-so and he died without children and he left a brother, and that's where the Bezdin functions. After that, Bezdin's going to oversee the Chalitza, and at that point they can drop out and ask a Horas Din. Can a Kohen marry this Chalutza? Can Yisrael marry this Chalutza? and so forth and so on.
The procedure itself would logically need three.
Oh. So that's the chiddush of this Mishnah. We're going to see in Chalitza that there are different opinions as to what comprises a bezdin in order to establish the kiyum chalitza, in other words, to implement the chalitza. So again, let's fast forward for a moment to chalitza and Rabbi Yehuda Omer.
Second,
where is this?
Second
Rabbi Shimon says b'shlosh. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'chamisha. Correct.
That's on the city for second.
Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'chalitza. Just 1 second. Just give me a second. Sorry, I didn't get up to that part of the Mishnah. I'm just starting Sanhedrin. He says a 5 million. Right. Okay. So that's gonna be a subject of chalitza. Okay, Rabosai. Now let's get back to Rashi. So we have a number of questions on Rashi, but the most important question we want to raise on Rashi is why Rashi requires both kofer bipikadon and sholeach yad bipikadon in order to establish gzela, a gazlan. It would seem that he's a gazlan with one or the other. So in order to try to understand this, let's begin with the Rambam. The Rambam, I'll give it to you to see inside, in Hilchos Gzela v'Aveda per Gimel, Halach Yiraf HaSholeach Yad v'Pikadon, the long discussion here in the Rambam, which we can skip. The Rambam says, Naseis Gzela, I'm sorry, Hareze Gazlan, V'Nischayev Ba'onsin, V'Naseis HaGzela Bershuso, Kedin Kol HaGazlan. So the Rambam is very outspoken. There's no doubt about it. The Rambam holds Sholeach Yad V'Pikadon is a gazlan. Rashi seems to assume that you need Kofer V'Pikadon plus Sholeach Yad V'Pikadon. Why is that so? Okay, Rabosai. Let's begin with a famous sugya at the beginning of Masechta Bava Kama. The Mishnah at the beginning of Bava Kama establishes how many Ovos Nezikin? 4, correct? Then the Gemara quotes a brisa of Rav Oshia, and Rav Oshia has 13. Then the Gemara quotes a brisa of Rabbi Chia, and Rabbi Chia has 24. Then the Gemara analyzes, number one, what are the cases that Rabbi Chia adds to Rav Oshia to get from 13 to 24, and why does Rav Oshia omit those cases? So the Gemara has this list of 24, and on the list appear Ganav v'Gazlan. So the Gemara asks, Rav Oshia, my time alotani hani. Rav Oshia, why doesn't he have Ganav and Gazlan? That would beef it up from 13 to 15. Right? So why does he omit these? So the Gemara says, Hakitani le, that he does have Ganav and Gazlan. Where in his list does he have Ganav and Gazlan? So the Gemara says, Shomer Chinam v'Hashoel. So already included in Shomer Chinam, we have Ganav and Gazlan. At this point, the Gemara now turns back to Rav Chia. Why doesn't Rav Chia agree then that once we have Shomrim, we already have Ganav and Gazlan? So why does Rav Chia feel compelled to add Ganav and Gazlan? So the Gemara answers, Rav Chia Nami Hotani Le. Gemara answers, Shomer Chinam V'Shoel Tani Mamona De Is De Asa Liyada Behetera Uketani Ganav Gazlan De Mamon De Asa Liyada Beisura. So the punchline of this sugya is that although Rav Oshia sufficed with 13 and he leaves out Ganav v'Gazlan because he already has Shomrim, Rav Chia holds there's a fundamental difference between Shomrim and Ganav v'Gazlan, because in the case of Shomrim, it's Asi Liyada v'Hetera. How did he get the object? The Shomer received it from the Mafkid. Masha'enken, in the case of Gazlan or Ganov, he absconded with the object. He never received it b'hetera. It came into his rishus b'isura. So we see something interesting, Rabosai, from this sugya. The sugya says that according to Rav Oshia, once we have Shomer Chinam, we don't need Ganav, because Ganav is included on the Shomer Chinam. How is that so? So Rashi says, Kigon, what is the case where Shomer Chinam includes Gneva? Shetoein Tainas Ganav. Here's a case where the Shomer claims that the sheep was stolen from him. V'harehi biyado. And the Edom testify that he's holding on to that sheep. So the very fact that he was towing Tainas Ganov makes him into a Gazlan. And Rashi then invokes a sugya in Bava Kamma, Daf Samach Gimel Amud Beis, the towing Tainas Ganov ki Ganov. Vitointainis Gazlan ki Gazlan. Then Rashi has a discussion why the Gemara mentioned Shoel, why isn't it sufficient to mention Shomer Chinam. But let's take the case of Shomer Chinam. So Shomer Chinam, if he's Tointainis Ganov, he's a Ganov, and he pays Kefel. If he's Tointainis Gazlan, he's Chayef Ha'onsim as a Gazlan is Chayef. Therefore, the Gemara insists that according to Rav Oshia, there's no need for the Mishnah to mention. I'm sorry, there's no need for the Brisa of Rav Oshia to mention Ganav and Gazlan. Comes along Rav Oshia and Rav Chia, and he adds Ganav and Gazlan. Why? Because that's a case of Asi Li, because Shomer, is a case of Asi Li Yada Behetera. So in order to understand this Gemara, and then hopefully come back to our Rashi, let's quote Rabbi Kiveger. Rabbi Kiveger has a very famous chiddush about the case of Toing Tainas Ganav. First I'll present it as a chakira, and then I'll tell you Rabbi Kiveger's conclusion. Yesh lachkar. When the shomer is Toing Tainas Ganav, he becomes a Ganav. Does that mean that he ceases to be a shomer? Or does he continue to be a shomer, but on top, to boot, we give him the status of a ganav? Does he wear two hats? What's the nafkemina? So Rabbi Kiveger wants to know the following. We have a principle with regard to gzela, that kol hagazlonim mishalmim kishas hagzela. So let's say, for example, at the moment of the gzela, the object was worth 10. Then it went up in value. The gazlan only pays 10, he doesn't have to pay 20. The shomer, on the other hand, pays kishas apshir. So if we assume, in one side of Rabbi Kiveger, that even though Tointainis Ganav becomes a Ganav, he still maintains his old status as a shomer, and his status as a gazlan is not mafkia his chiyuve shomer, then even after he's towing tainis ganav b'pikon, then became a gazlan, he still has chiyuve shomer. And therefore, if the object goes up in value and he was poshea, then he's going to have to pay 20. If on the other hand, once he becomes a gazlan, he's mafkia himself from parshas shomrim, then again, if the object went down in value from Shas Hagzeil till Shas Pshia, then as a Gazlan he's going to have to pay the higher price. But if on the other hand it went up in value till the Shas Pshia, he doesn't have to pay the higher price because he's only Chayav as a Gazlan. So here, Rabbi Kiveger wants to claim that no, that a Toing Tainas Ganav does not remove his status as a Shomer, but we, on top of his chiyuve shomer, we're going to add another layer, and he's going to chayev as a gazlan. And therefore, I'm sorry, I said it wrong. What I meant to say was that toing tainis ganav pikara means that on top of being a shomer, we're going to add another chiyuv of being a gazel, but we're not going to remove his original chiyuv as a shomer. And therefore, if the object goes up in value after the shas hagzel until the shas pshia, he's going to have to pay the higher price. If it went down in value, we're going to say he's chayav as a gazlan. Or if there was an onus that happened and there was no pshia, he's chayav as a gazlan. So that's a case where it went down in value. But if it went up in value, and he's going to claim, well, I'm a gazlan, if I only want to pay shas hagzela, the answer is, says Rav Piva, no. He retains his chiyuv shmira, and his status as a gazlan does not unwind and uproot his status as a shomer. He's chayav now b'shas pshia as a shomer. So far, so good. And Rabbi Kivay claims he has many rayas for this yisod.
Always say some sort of
kibbeh
in value.
I'm not sure what you mean by kibbeh rabbin. A kibbeh rabbin applies
when if he goes down in value, he gets in some ways more valuable.
Well, again, it all depends upon these dinim of chiyuvei gazlan and chiyuvei shomer. A chiyuv gazlan is clinched and it's fixed at the time of the gzela. A chiyuv shomer is chayav at the time of pshia, and Rabbi Kivega wants to say that in the case of Toin Tainis Ganav Bikonon, he gets both chiyuvim lechumra, and he's going to have to pay whether it is as you know whatever the highest price will be, whether it's kishas hagzela or kishas hapshia, whether it's b'toras gazan or b'toras shomer. So that's a case in which the status of the shomer was engendered as a gazlan was engendered by his taina. However, Rabbi Kivega says the following: what happens if his status as a gazlan was engendered not by his taina but by a maisa gzela, i.e., shlichus yad bepikadon? And here's where Rabbi Kivega is medayik in the Rambam. The Rambam that we mentioned before says that Asholeach Yad V'Pikadon Nase Hareze Gazlan Nischaya Ba'onsin. But listen to the three extra words that the Rambam adds: V'Nase Sagzela Bershusa. Hold on to that for just a second. Then the Rambam goes on to discuss the case of Kofer V'Pikadon, or the case of Toein Tainis Ganav B'Pikadon. Here the Rambam says that he's Chayef HaOnsin, but the Rambam omits those additional three words of Naseis HaGzela B'Rshusa. So Rav Kivega wants to say the following: that in the case of a Shomer who Shalech Yad B'Pikadon, he's Mafkia, he forfeits the status as a Shomer. He's no longer a Shomer. Now, what does that mean? He's not chayav for pshia? Says Rabbi Kivega, he's not chayav for pshia. Why? Because he's a gazlan. Why is he a gazlan? Because of Shaleach Yad B'Pikadon. The Rambam, in the case of Shaleach Yad B'Pikadon, adds three words: Naseis HaGzela B'Rshuso. Why did the Rambam add those three words? The Rambam wants to establish that through Shlichas Yad B'Pikadon, he becomes a full-fledged gazlan. This is no longer a case of behetera asi liyade, because now behetera asi liyade means that when the object was located in place X, which is where the mafkid put it, and that's where the shomer is watching and guarding the object, that's called behetera. But now the object is in the reshus of the bailim, again because yad shomer ki yad bailim, and now what the shomer did was he lifted it up in order to place it down another place for his own use. That already becomes a maisa gzela.
So like he's making a kinyan on it.
Correct, exactly. Okay, you took the words out of my mouth. Naseis HaGzela B'Rshuso means that now he's koneh the object as a gazlan. Once he's koneh the object as a gazlan, claims Rabbi Kivega, he's mafkia his status as a shomer. A shomer is only a shomer with chiyuvei shmira vis-a-vis an object that belongs to the mafkid. Once the shomer becomes a gazlan on the object, takes it for himself, is Naseis HaGzela B'Rshuso, he now has acquired ownership of the object. That's going to be mafkia his status as a shomer. So therefore, Rabbi Kivega says in a Shaleach Yad B'Pikadon situation, if the object is destroyed or lost, the Shaleach Yad B'Pikadon will pay Kishas HaShlichus Yad, and even if the object goes up in value after that, because of his pshia, it gets lost, he will not have to pay the higher value because he's mafkia himself for parsha shomrin. He becomes an asi liyada bisura because now he took the object into his own rishus and now he made a kinyan on it. He's a gazlan. Masha enken in the cases of towing tainis ganav vibikodim or kofer vibikodim, here we have a whole different story. Here what we're talking about is, and Reb Baruch Ber quotes Reb Chaim as saying, this is a new kind of a gazlan. What did Reb Chaim mean when he said there's a new type of gazlan? The answer is, says Reb Baruch Ber, he never actually took the object. He was never Shalech Yad Mipikada. All he did was he put forth a claim. And the Torah says, with that claim, we're going to define you as a Ganav. So we saw Rav Sheshes on Kufei of the Beis, who says that Hatoin Tan is Ganav because Nasal of Ganav. What does it mean, Nasal of Ganav? He gets the Chiyuve Gneva of Onsim, but he's still in the Parish of Shomrim, because it still becomes Osi Liyod of Hetera. He never did a Maisa Gzela to take it into his Rishus. That's why the Rambam, when he speaks that Toin Tain is Ganav Bikodin, or Kofer Bikodin, the Rambam omits these three words of Nasis Gzela Rishus, because the Rambam wants to tell you he's still a Shomer. The object still is in the possession of the Mafkin, and Chiyuve Shmira continue, and it'll be Chayef for Pshia, despite the fact that he's a Ganav. He's a Ganav in the halachic sense that the Torah says that as a result of this taina you become a ganav, it means that now we're going to impose upon you chiyuvei onsim that go way beyond the purview of your shmira, because chiyuvei shmira do not encompass onsim. Again, we're not talking about a shoel now. So then now what happens is that in the case of toin tainis ganav v'pikadon, as Rabbi Kivek would have it, you have a double chiyuv. As we said before, he wears two hats. Why? On the one hand, the Torah has upgraded his status l'chiyuva to that of a ganav, because by virtue of his taino. But on the other hand, he still remains a shomer, because he never made a kinyan on the object. He never took it into his rishus. So Rabbi Kivega says he's now chayev under two categories. He simultaneously is a shomer for chiyuv pshia, and he's chayev as a ganav for chiyuv onsim. And now we're going to have to look at the shas onus, and we're going to have to look at the shas pshia. So if at the moment... I'm sorry, what I meant to say is going to look at the Shas Taina. At that Shas Taina, when he put forward this false claim that he doesn't have the object, when he really does have the object, that's called Kofer B'Pikadon. Or if he claims that the object was stolen and he really has the object stashed up in his vault, he is going to be Chayef for Onsim from now on, and that's B'Toras Ganov, but he's not a real Ganov, he's not a full-fledged Ganov. He's only a Ganov as far as Chiyuve Onsim is concerned, and now he no longer has the Titus Ptur. Well, I offered the perfect Shmira, and the lightning struck. No, that he can't. He's a Ganav, but he'll be maintaining, shall we say, simultaneously the status of a Shomer. He's still Chayiv in Shmira, and he'll be Chayiv in Pshia, and therefore, and why? Because he never made a Kinyan on. He never took it out of the Rishus of the Mafkin. Hence, if the object goes up in value, says Rabbi Kivegan, at the time of the Pshia, it's worth more than it was worth at the time of the Tainas Ganav, he will pay the higher price because he's also considered a Shomer. He hasn't been mafkia his status as a Shomer. Now, what we want to go on to, I just realized that it's, we're running out of time. What time is it now? Is it 11:29 or something like that? Oh, 11:29. So I'm going to have to call this part one, because the part two is to take all this lumbus and now try to plug it into the first Rashi in Masechta Sanhedrin and see if we can understand why Rashi feels compelled to add the Shalech Yad B'Pikadon and upgrade the status of this Shomer / Ganav to the status of a full-fledged Gzela, which means a full-fledged Gzela in this case means a gzela with a kinyan gzela, which is a mafkia of his status as a shomer. Do you follow me? So that piece of the puzzle will fill in b'li neder next time. You'll let me know if this time works for you, and if it doesn't work, I know for Daniil it was just a one-time shot, but we'll see. We'll talk to Daniil Senior and then Daniil Junior, and then we'll make a decision. Okay, then, Rav Osai. But you get the love to see the difference between two categories of ganav in a shomer. One is a ganav only halachically because of this new parsha of Gneva based on his taina, and the other is the shaleach yad, where he actually takes the object out of the rishus of the mafkid, he brings it into his own rishus, and that's a full-fledged gzeila with kinyani gzeila. He becomes a gazlan; he's no longer a shalom. Okay, then that's what we have so far. Okay, then in 15 minutes I'm going to start my shiur ksubis, and anyone who's around is invited to join me for that. We're starting the perek called Elu Naris, which is the third perek of ksubis, and that's an even shiur as well. All right, thank you.